You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 4 June, I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Preston Aramsamy, markets. We're talking around the pet care market as an investment space, and we'll be talking to RH Borpello on their results, but also trying to get an understanding of what the business is and how they operate. Some morning headlines from Forbes. Apple employees will return to the office 3 days a week starting in September. They'll be remote Wednesdays and Fridays. We're starting to see in the US how this work from home is going to sort of be in place longer term, and we'll start getting a sense towards the end of the year. And then Business Day, Helena Conradi to step down as CEO of Sunlum-owned Satrix. She's been in Sunlum for 20 years. She's been Satrix, initially COO and more recently CEO since 2013, and is going to, not going anywhere, I suppose, just take some time off after 20 plus years at Sunlum. Morning markets, lots of red. US S&P down 0.4, NASDAQ off 1%. Asia mixed, Sydney up 0.3, Tokyo down 0.3%. Commodities red overnight, gold under pressure, $1,872 an ounce. Rand 13.63 against the US dollar. And the top 40 looking to open about 30 points down at the open. What's that? 0.05%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Preston Aramsamy, portfolio manager, Nedbank Private Wealth. Preston, appreciate the early morning. Announcement out from Prosus yesterday. They're going to be acquiring Stack Overflow. It's a developer portal type business. They're paying, what, $1.8 billion for about 25 billion rand. I mean, in essence, they're kind of trying to find the next Tencent. And probably not necessarily an investment as big as Tencent. That's perhaps a once in a company's lifetime. But in essence, you know, try and dilute that. I mean, are these sort of size bets big enough? Or do they perhaps need to go bigger? Or is it throwing a spaghetti at the wall and maybe one of them sticks?
Morning, Simon, to you and your listeners. Yeah, Simon, it's hard to tell if, you know, the company is able to get enough non-Tencent growth from these smaller kind of deals. You know, Simon, several of these smaller bets are unlisted. Mm-hmm. So the market doesn't necessarily even believe their valuation. But, you know, Simon, you know, the growth on an acquisition like this, you know, education technology, it's certainly going to be an area of growth going forward. So, you know, this small deal is probably a sensible acquisition in my view. So, Simon, you know, what's encouraging for me is that the management team has been on the ball, busy mm-hmm. looking out for deals. I mean, they've deployed, it's just more than 10% of the funds from the 2% Tencent unbundle into this deal. So they're busy looking for deals with their expertise and knowledge of the market. And as they deploy capital into these deals, it should translate into earnings growth going forward, Simon. So I'm quite happy with it. I think it's a sensible move. And it's good to see some deployment of that Tencent unwind into some deals.
And I suppose, and as you're talking, it suddenly makes me realize, you know, this deal on its own, 25 billion ZAR, you know, modest for process. But then another deal here, another deal there, and then perhaps in time sort of almost merge them together. And maybe that's part of how they also start to get some critical mass. They've certainly done that when they've started moving into the classified space, a decade or so ago.
Yeah, no, agreed, Simon. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. But for me, Simon, where I get a lot of comfort is that I mentioned it at the beginning. You know, the market doesn't trust the valuation of a lot of these holdings, within the Tencent process, NASPA structure. So you're literally just buying Tencent, and whatever upside you're getting from these deals, you know, it's just a positive for you as an investor, essentially. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unwinds, Simon. But again, I back the management team, their knowledge of the market, their expertise, and I'm positive about it, and I'm sure that some of these deals are going to materialize and we're going to see some earnings growth from these companies going forward.
Yeah, and I take your point there. Is ultimately, if you're a Prosus shareholder or an SPAS shareholder, it is about trusting that management team. Otherwise, I don't know where you'd be invested there. Quick last question. We saw the Rand almost 13.50 yesterday. This morning trading 13.62 and a half. I mean, as a portfolio manager, I mean, how much do you sort of wake up in the morning and check the currency first? Or is your view that, yes, the currency in the short term might have influence, but longer term, really, it's about the stocks and the businesses that you're looking at?
Yeah, Simon, it's quite interesting. You know, some of these bullish market watchers are calling the rand to go to 12, 11, even 10 rand to the dollar. And, you know, on the other hand, if you just look at a simple purchasing power parity, you know, you're looking at the rand being at, you know, kind of fair value levels. But, you know, Simon, you've got positives for the rand, stimulus out of the U.S., you know, Biden talking about another 6 trillion.
Yeah.
But the negative, you've got our fiscus issues here locally. So, Simon, to your question, essentially, from my point of view, currency markets are way too volatile, especially an emerging market currency like the rand. It's very hard to call tops or bottoms. So, you know, from a portfolio construction perspective, don't time when investing. You know, always use the phased approach. When you're looking to send money offshore, as an example, upon rand spent, externalize a portion of that money, and vice versa. If you're looking for yield and you're looking to bring money back locally, upon rand weakness, start to convert some of those dollars and pounds into rands. So, Simon, from a portfolio construction perspective, it's always good to have a healthy portion of assets, both locally and offshore, diversifying that currency risk. And then, you know, if you look through on the rand, you know, SA assets are still quite cheap when compared to developed market assets. So, like I said, Simon, invest using a phased approach. And, you know, lastly, if one wants to deploy a strong rand offshore, as an example, you don't have to go directly into the U.S. markets or offshore markets, which are quite lofty at the moment. You know, you could buy U.S. dollars directly. You could buy a U.S. cash ETF. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we've been doing in some of our portfolios. And then enter the market when you see a proper pullback and you're more ready to get that equity risk exposure.
Yep, there's that APSA czar currency. That's Preston Aaronsamy, portfolio manager at Nedbank Private Wealth. Appreciate the time. Our poll today to you on our social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. As we say, Process is spending $1.8 billion. Is it a big enough deal? Yes, a good start. No, they need massive deals. Or perhaps why? Tencent is great. I think they can blend them together. But, you know, $2 billion, it's never going to be a new Tencent.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Quinton Zunga. He is CEO at RH Boipelo. Quinton, appreciate the early morning. Numbers out earlier this week on year-end February. Net asset value up 34%. Headline earnings up 67%. NAV per share up 15%. Quinton, first sort of dive in essence, you're an investment holding company focusing predominantly healthcare. You've got a financial asset as well, financial services in the insurance space. Are you sort of as a company, you very much investment, in other words, you're hands off and not managing, or are you in time looking for perhaps synergies and more involvement in the investments that you hold? Because a number of them, you've got the majority, if not 100% stakes.
Good morning and good morning to your listeners. Yes, we are an investment holding company, but the important thing with us is, number one, we are in the affordable healthcare space.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, we are a consolidating entity. So we don't hold generally minority stakes, which is peculiar. Obviously, most of the listed holding companies would hold minority stakes in a number of assets. So we are trying to bring together the affordable healthcare industry, a sector, by investing in multiple verticals that can bring some synergies.
Yeah, and I take that, and you mentioned the affordable there, and that is you know, going through it. I mean, the two things that stood out. One was, you know, part maybe Rondebosch, but you're in Rustenburg, you're in Vryheid, you're sort of not in the sort of traditional large metros as a rule, and it is around that affordable, which is, you know, we've got a lot of healthcare at the bottom end, which is the state. We've got a lot of healthcare at the top end for those with the fancy medical aids, and you're saying, hang on, there's a gap here in the middle for that, you know, that average working class South African who wants healthcare but can't perhaps afford some of the top end. Still quality, but at a better price.
Correct. I mean, the statistics are pretty well known right now that private healthcare, as we know it, only covers about 20% of the population, and the state is covering 80%. So what our company is saying is that we need to take private healthcare to 45 or 50% of the population, which will reduce the burden on the state and will bring in a lot more people into healthcare. So the key target area for us is the employed but uninsured. These are people who are working but cannot afford the medical aid products currently. They earn less than $7,500 per month, and they have a job, but they don't have any benefits. But what we are saying is that you can't generate products for that population, and it's quite a substantial number of people. These are the security guards, the cleaning staff. All of those are quite significant in the economy, and they need to be covered as well.
Yeah, and they've got that disposable income, as you say, they have the jobs and the like. The investment company, obviously there's valuations, and I don't want to delve into the complexities of IFRS because it'll hurt our heads. But how are you doing the fair value adjustments? Because obviously in this particular year, they swung and helped you massively in that respect. Some years they're potentially going to go the other way. How do you as an investment holding company manage those fair value adjustments?
So I think that what we do, we look at each asset performance year on year, and obviously when it grows, we reflect that. If you look at our accounts, not everything has grown, and especially there are some assets which did have some impact of COVID-19. But the key thing for us is what we try and do is make sure that we have a fair reflection of the asset. You are pretty correct. A fair value has in it a lot of accounting and valuation jargon. But for us, we think we probably feel we are on the conservative side on our valuation, which is a reflection of what we see is potential in the future.
We'll leave that there. That's Quinton Zunga. He is CEO of RH Popello. Appreciate the early morning, sir.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Andrew Ditburner. He's our Chief Investment Officer, Old Mutual Wealth. Andrew, appreciate the early morning time. The pet care industry, an amazing piece of research that you included in a note out earlier this week. Over 11 million Americans got a new pet during the pandemic. Half of British households who had a pet added another one during lockdown. I know anecdotally from my social circle, people were out and buying pets. The pet care industry, even without the pandemic, is one that is a really high quality investment case. I mean, people are buying pets and spending money, and I know from our own pets, in some cases, a lot of money.
Morning, Simon. Yes. Often when we look at or we think of these mega trends, very often we're fixated right now on technology, thinking about artificial intelligence, autonomous driving, etc., and people often overlook smaller industries, but, industries that have, very strong tailwinds in place. And, you highlight a couple of points, people buying new pets recently, and maybe there has been a bit of an acceleration, I suppose, during lockdowns, economic lockdowns. People also, I suppose, millennials these days aren't having as many children, today. Their pets are their children. But this is also a trend that's been in place, for centuries, actually, when you think about the domestication of pets. So it lends itself to some very interesting investment opportunities, which we've looked at. And it's not just, pet care. It's also, growing populations, growing middle incomes, and people wanting to consume a higher quality protein. So it also, talks to livestock, looking after animals on that side of the fence as well. So, it's a very interesting investment opportunity at the moment.
I hadn't even thought of livestock in that equation as well. And one of the points you make is, we've been talking how during the pandemic, if anything, it boomed. People got more pets. It's going to be fairly recession-proof. There are going to be recessions from time to time, but you're not going to stop feeding your pets. You might chop down a little if you have to, but it's going to hold fairly well during the tougher economic pandemic times, and yet still potentially give us the boom during the good times, because then you can go out and buy more chewy toys for your dogs or scratch pads for your cats.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so the company that I highlighted in the note you referred to is Zootis, and it's effectively, you can think of it as a pharmaceutical business for animals.
Yeah.
And that's both pets and livestock. And if you look what it's done, you know, you can go back to the global financial crisis. You know, it grew its revenues quite handsomely during that period. Look back over last year, you know, this economic shutdown, and I think it grew revenues in the region of about 7%. So as you say, you know, very, very recession-proof. And another factor I think that we really like is the fact that when you think about pharmaceutical companies, they often face these patent cliffs.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got the patents and eventually they run out and then you get the generic competition coming through. You know, this is a pharmaceutical company for animals that doesn't face patent cliffs and very few generic competitors as well. You know, so there, when you look at some of their drugs or products rather, you know, the average age of the top 20 odd products is about 30 years. You know, so they're once you're in a dominant position, and Zootis is very much the global leader in this space, once you're in a dominant position, it's very difficult for new upstart competitors to come and spend the money and compete with your drugs that have been, or your products rather, that have been on the market for many, many years.
Yeah, it's that massive barrier to entry, and you know, and you mentioned earlier that some people, you know, having less kids, and in some cases the pets are almost like their kids, and you're not going to suddenly switch out of a product. I mean, I know the cat in our house, you know, she eats a certain brand and that is it. We wouldn't dare change it, and it gives those barriers for entry from a technological patent perspective, but also just from a consumer who is, this is what we buy our pet, and so we will.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your pets effectively become your children, as you say, and you're definitely not going to skimp on costs when it comes to, you know, feeding them or if something's wrong and medicating them. You know, mm-hmm. So this is exactly the, you know, I suppose you can call it a moat, I suppose, around this business if you want to think of it that way.
Yeah.
I think another point, maybe, you know, when thinking about the investment case for these types of businesses is also the market. You know, when you look at it from a competitor perspective, Zootis is one of, you know, the top four that account for more than 50% of this market globally. You know, so you've got a rational competition in here. But then there are some smaller players which allow, you know, for decent acquisitive opportunities in the space, which we've seen over the years. And then also when thinking about your clients, you know, they've got obviously thousands and thousands of very small clients.
Yeah.
You know, these aren't businesses that have, you know, that are business to business, that have very big clients that obviously then lend themselves to those clients having, you know, bargaining power when it comes to pricing. So with many small or thousands and thousands of small clients around the world, you know, it gives a business like this pricing power. And then you start to see that coming through in the company fundamentals when you look at it, you know, from a revenue growth, profitability, margins, and a growing bottom line.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, a great industry, and tons listed in the US. I mean, there's Chew and others. Zoot is the one we're talking about here. Andrew Ditburner, Chief Investment Officer, Old Mutual Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. That's the show for today. Poll yesterday we were asking, I was chatting with Simon Fulmore from Independent Securities on the rise of China, and asking how important it was as part of your investment portfolio, as it is becoming an economic superpower. And we asked you on our LinkedIn, our Twitter, our Facebook, social media accounts. It was fairly evenly split between the yes, the no, and a little bit. Although I've got to say, LinkedIn definitely skewed to more yes, China is an important part of a portfolio. And remember, our poll today, we're asking you around process, do they need to do some giant deals or do these small ones stack up enough at the end of the day? That's it. We are live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the MoneyWeb app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7 a.m. on the website, the app, and wherever good podcasts are aggregated. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests, for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.